So I wanted to share with you all. I was sharing with them briefly on the day they arrived, a few encounters here in the last few days. One was with a friend who's a doctor at a hospital, and she's on her own spiritual journey for many years. And we were talking about COVID and the difficulties, as we all know, most hospitals faced. But she said she really saw human nature at a level which she had not been exposed to before. And she gave the example of when there was a ventilator shortage and people were desperate for ventilators. So someone, one particular family, was under tremendous pressure because their loved one needed a ventilator. It was not available. So she told them, she said, look, I can't do anything in this scenario. The minute the ventilator gets free, any ventilator gets free, it will be made available. That's the standard procedure. Till then, what can I do? I can't remove it from someone who's in need of it. So this family kept calling her through the night and asking, has anyone died? Has anyone died? Is a ventilator free now? And then she said, after her first call, after the second call, she said, look, shouldn't you be asking, is there anyone who no longer needs the ventilator? Is there anyone who became okay? But you're so eager for someone to die, someone who is not yours, in order to save someone who is yours. That thought even didn't strike that family, that there is a possibility that a ventilator may not be required anymore by someone who is healing. So for her, that was quite an eye-opener. She'd seen already enough being in the hospital for decades now. But she said that really moved her. The other was the lack of pragmatism. When she said there was an oxygen shortage in the hospital, what the doctors found was, the minute they left the room, the doctors and nurses, people were stealing the other patient's oxygen and putting up the nose of their loved one, who already had a tube in her nose. So no knowledge that that could also harm. Just this fear that my person needs oxygen. The oxygen is there, and the minute nobody is around, yanking it off the other patient who doesn't have a family member nearby and putting it. These are the situations she has encountered which really expose us, our nature, our bias, our selfishness. That one is caring for our loved ones, but the other is harming others. Caring for our loved ones is not enough, but inflicting harm and violence in thought upon others so that we ensure our loved one is safe. Now, this is of course very extreme, this example, but we all are guilty of this in some form or another in our lives. We do it. That is why I met this mystic. He's about 75 years old. Met him a few days ago. He was a millionaire. He was a cardiovascular and pulmonary surgeon in the States and had a very successful practice and staff below him of doctors, etc. Mercedes, BMW, driving everything. Near Boston, he was near Boston. And he left everything, gave away all his wealth and moved to the mountains here in Srinagar. So I asked him, I said, Dr. Saab, what does it come down to since you attained the highest peaks of spirituality, which is what I was informed by my Sufi master here that Dr. Saab has really attained. He said, for me, God is love and love is God. But it's hard to explain that to people. So all I tell them is, if you can't love another, at least don't harm another. That's enough. Nothing more is required. And he said the world is full of millions and millions of people, but very few human beings. There was another beautiful anecdote she mentioned. There was this poor lady who came to the hospital. Her son had a brain injury. I think something fell on his head. So didn't have money. So the doctor suggested a scan. There was no money. So there's a procedure when you need to waive off charges. it's a bit complex. So she told the mother, don't worry, I'll try my best to waive off the charges. But there was no time to go through red tape and protocol. And she said at that moment, the head of that department which sanctions waivers happened to walk past, who doesn't walk past normally. And she said, sir, this is an emergency and we need to waive off the charges. He said, no problem, signed the slip and it was done. Then the next step, the surgery had to be planned, costing a lot of money. Now, again, there's a procedure. There are NGOs they contact when funding is required for certain surgeries, but it takes days because there's already a waiting list. Funds have to be disbursed. This was an emergency. So she wrote to an NGO and wrote to the hospital saying, we, in order to save this life, we might have to expedite the process. And the department said, we can't do that, as you very well know, because then everyone else will complain that they've been shunted down. She said, fair enough, I tried my best. In half an hour, they said, it's done. The funds have been organized. So because of her level of awareness, she saw everything was happening very effortlessly for this boy. She had not seen such a flow, one thing after another, one thing after another, and he recovered. So she sat down with the mother and tried to get to know more about the mother. She was very curious that how did things fall into place like this. But she drew a blank. Mother said, I'm a regular worker, I work in someone's house, this, that and all. Very simple living. Nothing emerged. But she pursued this, that the universe really took care of everything, A to Z. What is it here? Is it just coincidence or is there something? And she said, I was so surprised when I found out that this lady for the last 25 years had been serving a renowned spiritual master in Kashmir. And when I found that out, I concluded, this is what the lady is saying, that this must be the grace in operation, because I have not seen this kind of thing ever. Even that side she has seen. So I told her, I said, you should write a book. All these things are so interesting, you know, each could be one chapter. And her husband said, we can call it On Death and Human Behavior, because that's when our true nature reveals itself, because the ego is afraid of death and dying, wants to survive at all costs. On Death and Human Behavior. Because when we die, whoever remembers us is left only with a thought. The form is gone. Memories are there, and memories give rise to feelings and emotions. That's all. Now one could say that however one is remembered is what was meant to be and what is destined. But this is where the wisdom teachings come in. If in one's life, any teaching, not just this teaching, it reveals to you the essence of life and living, how people are just conditioned beings on the basis of which they say things and do things, and your interaction with people transforms, your interaction with yourself transforms, you are bound to inflict less harm on others when you see that the expression is the same, only the instruments are programmed differently. You are going to have a less violent relationship with others as well as yourself. That is something which is very important, which gets overlooked. What a teaching can do in terms of transforming one's nature. I read it in a book, I forget which one, that what the guru does is channelizes one's energies in a certain direction. Energies which were scattered are now channelized. Which means what? Guru could be a teaching, teacher or consciousness. We are not talking about a form. Means now if I see everything through the prism of a new way of looking at things, like everything being the will of God, nobody being the doer of their actions, all my energies are now channelized in this thought process. Because I see everything in this light. As a result of which, I find I'm kinder, I'm nicer, I'm more compassionate. Plus, I find that whenever I see imperfections or limitations in other personalities, I know I too have my own. So my understanding becomes deeper and deeper. So the chances are, when I'm gone and someone remembers me, there will be a smile on their face, rather than, oh God, this person really troubled me. We had a Hindi teacher who was nasty. I have mentioned this before, I think, in some satsangs, with a capital N. He was hated by the boys because he was rude, he was insulting, based on his conditioning, which we don't know, but still he was a teacher. Someone, supposedly, one should look up to. And when he died, when our school group got together every now and then, more than one person said, thank God he died. He should have died earlier. So what happens is, we find, day by day, as life, our lives go on, the more breaths we have consumed in this incarnation, we are dying to our opinions, we are dying to our judgments, we are dying to our condemnations of others as well as ourselves. All these are traits of the ego which we are dying to, thanks to the grace of this understanding. And therefore, the cliche that when you die to the ego, you truly start living, means this only. You become more and more of a blank slate, more open, more relatable. You may still have your preferences. You may still want to not be with some people and be with others. Not want to be with some family members and be with others. No one is taking that away, because we all are designed to have preferences. If I have two parties to go to on one evening, I can decide for myself, do I go to party A, where there are influential people and I can wear my social mask and chat with them? Or do I go to party B, where I feel more of a connection, more of the same wavelength? Do I go there? Now, no choice is right or wrong. Based on where I am in life, in this moment, I have to take a decision. Do I go to party A or party B? I have to do that. And that's what I do. But the difference is, I don't condemn either A or B, because I now know both are aspects of the divine. But based on where I am today, my vibration, my essence, I take the decision in my best interest. And so this is how I live my life. Or rather, this is how my life is being lived. But I'm very grateful. I was with a teacher who was well-mannered and polished and well-educated. The Sufi masters here can be deadly. I visit someone who's now probably close to 100. And in his darbar, there's no distinction. You could be a politician, you could be a poor person, you could be a businessman. Everyone is treated the same. And I have seen myself that someone has entered the door while I've been sitting inside, and he has screamed at that person, Shaitan ka beta, Shaitan ka beta, chale jao. That poor guy is completely clueless what has happened, why he's being shouted at, and he has to leave because he will not be allowed to stay. Shaitan ka beta, son of the devil. And I have seen people come up near him and he has told them, don't you dare enter and pollute my darbar with all your bias and prejudices. Because his adopted son would translate for me very softly what all he was saying. Get out of here. Then I heard something even more deadly, that a week ago he was sitting, so he has his gadi and he has his leg up like this and his hookah. So two people entered. Now I don't know whether they knew him or not, but he said, Arjun, come sit here. Now that is a privilege when the master calls you nearby, because they don't tell everyone come sit here. So I thought, sounds like someone he's very fond of. So the first guy sat here, second guy, and one fatak gave him. 2-3 slaps. And he said, don't you ever come and sit here again. See, that is how they operate. It doesn't make sense. The other guy ran away. Now she told me this on the phone, this friend, doctor friend. She also goes to him. So when we went, I said, I can't take any chances. So far, I've had 10 years of a good equation, but if he's in a foul mood, I don't want to be at the receiving end. So we were sitting behind, and then I said, now a lot of time has passed. So I told the Irshad bhai, I said, now can we take his blessings and then we will leave? He said, ha ha, come, come. So he made us sit there. Now I was quick minded. After I said what I had to say, so as I said, his thing was like this, na? I quickly put my forehead here. So there was no scope for any slaps or anything. And so he was doing like this. I was very happy. And then I got up and I said, okay, we'll take your leave. Or rather, can we take your leave? You see, they have a different way of operating. Even the Nath yogis are known for this. You can't go when you please and say, okay, now I have to go because my lunch is waiting for me at home. You have to ask, ijazat hai? Do we have your permission to leave? We went up to the dargah of a master hundreds of years ago. So I had been there 10 years ago. So I was asking him, I said, you know, the feeling arose to go up now after 10 years. We were thinking of going up. And he said, very good, very good. So we went up after meeting. Now with us were his two escorts, young boys. So I was asking them, please take us in. So they said, no, no, you go in. We are waiting outside. So I said, but you know, it helps because we don't know the protocol and all that. He said, it's nothing. You're just going to pay your respects inside. So you just go bow down and put some rupees in that donation box and come out. So I thought it's very odd. I said to my wife, what, they don't want to come with us because we are from different communities or what is it? So I asked him after we came out, I said, why didn't you come in? And he replied, he said, because unlike you, we forgot to ask his permission. See, and of course he is their master. But he said, we didn't ask, can we go into the dargah? So we will go back down and later with his blessings and permission go up. This has happened with Shirdi Sai Baba. There was a story where he asked someone who had come to visit him not to leave yet, to leave after a few hours. And both ways it has happened. Either major disaster has been averted or the one who didn't listen to him has ended up in a major disaster. With such masters, you have to be in a very high degree of awareness. Not a casual chalta hai attitude. And this Dr. Sahib, 75-year-old man who left the US and went up to the mountain. I was so humbled by seeing his kutia, one bed, kitchen platform and bathroom. This is someone who has, as I mentioned before, given up a lifestyle of Mercedes and BMWs. Absolutely fluent in English, very nice to talk to. So there were four of us, me, my wife, my Sufi master here and his assistant. So he first, Dr. Sahib, put the chula on, water. He said, will you have something? So we said, we'll have some tea. Made the tea, chai patta, this, that, everything did. Pulled out two, I don't even know if you could call them cups. Let's call them mini containers, pot tea, and he gave it to us. So I passed it on to the Sufi master. He said, no, you are the guest. I have come to him many times. You have to have this. It's for y'all. So, okay, we had it. He opened a packet of Mari biscuits, put it on a plate. And then Dr. Sahib told the other two, since I have only two cups, as soon as they finish, I'll wash those cups and I'll serve you tea in them. And I felt so bad that I quickly drank my tea so I could give him the cup. And then what he did, he poured me more tea and gave it back to me. I said, I don't want more tea. Please serve it to the others. He said, no, because I saw you quickly had the first cup. You didn't enjoy it. Now you have to have the second. Don't worry about them. They are my people. And so they see everyone as their people. We are strangers. What has he got from serving us tea? What benefits are going to accrue to him? What is that saying we have when we say we treat the guest like God? What is the Atithi Devo Bhava? God, the guest is God, God is the guest. Is this, you don't need money for that. I remember we were in the English countryside, I think Burton on the Water or somewhere in the Cotswolds, and we saw this plaque which said that all the guests who come to this house bring a smile to my face, some by entering, others by leaving. In the neighbor's garden, they have a flower called evening primrose. So it's pretty amazing. This flower has such a short lifespan that you can see it birthing and dying in a few minutes. Around sunset is when it opens. So we were all there with our cameras. So you see like the flowers like this. And then suddenly it'll open, bloom fully and die. Evening primrose. That is the lifespan of the flower. At least I think so. I may be mistaken, but that's what I remember. Basically, our lives are the same, only extended in the duration of time, seemingly. I remember as children, we used to hear this and we would recite it. Ek tha raja, ek thi rani, dono mar gaye, khatam kahani. Once there was a king and a queen, they both died and the story is over. Story is over. So these stories we carry in our heads of events that have happened in our life, people in our lives, which we keep playing on and on and on and on. This happened to me, that happened to me, this one said this, that one did that. Might as well end those stories while one is alive. The dialogues of the thinking mind. That is why Rameshji would keep repeating that the more and more we accept thy will be done, the less and less the thinking mind goes all over the place. Your headache reminded me of this. In my advertising days, we had this boy who had joined from South India who had broken English, but very smart, very like, he was amazing. Shankar was his name. He was older than me. Everyone was older than me at that time in the office, but he could converse in English and you'd figure out what he was saying. So one day he came up to me and he said, I'm not feeling well. Can I go home? And he was clutching his stomach. So I said, of course you can go home. What happened? So he thought, trying to get the right words. And he said, I think I have a headache in my stomach. So sweet, no? So innocent. But he had to figure out how to communicate with his broken English. And I got it, that there was a stomach problem, that's it. And then once he read, he used to read these fat books by all these big Western authors, Robert Ludlum and Harold Robbins and Sidney Sheldon and all that. Fat, huh? I was so impressed by this chap who'd never studied in an English medium school. In the train he would read. So one day he came in the evening to my cabin, and these are the pre-internet days, right? So Google and all was not there. This was when I was 20 years old, 22 years old. So he said, Gautam, what is the meaning of the word canary? So I said, it's a bird. Oh shit. Now I'll have to read the book from the start because I thought it was something else. I'll never forget these two things. Amazing. It's like this Baba, Shafi Baba. When we didn't know us, once he took us to someone's house and they made an elaborate lunch for us. At that time, I was non-vegetarian. My mother was vegetarian, sister was vegetarian. But the spread came all non-vegetarian because, you know, their conditioning is meat. They don't really make a vegetarian spread as such. So it didn't perhaps strike his host also to ask what we'll eat, you know. They rolled out a real spread of kebabs and this and that and all that. So then he saw that my mother's not eating, sister's not eating and all that. So he said, why are you not eating? such nice food. So they said we are vegetarian. And then he realized, oh God, he said, you know, mujhe puchna tha, I should have asked, the host said and all that. So even the Baba felt bad. He said, haan, wo bahut achha hai, aap vegetarian ho, mujhe bhi puchna tha. Then he said, main toh bhi vegetarian hoon, dil se. Because he's non-veg. But he said, in my heart, I'm vegetarian. I said, yes, I understand that. Because we would not be there otherwise if he was not vegetarian by heart. My friend, this doctor, the lady, we were having tea with her the day before. So her husband was there and her son, 18-year-old boy, who's going to the US to study law. So she said, Gautam, I am very clear. Kal ka kya pata? I tell every morning my son and my husband, my keys are here, this is here, that is there. You'll have no tension when I'm gone. So that poor boy, bichara, he's sitting like, and the husband is saying, you know, I have to listen to this every day. She'll say in the morning before leaving, this is here, that is there, kal kya pata. So nobody should have any problem when I'm gone and all that. But isn't it a 50-50 that she goes after I go? Because I'm older than her. So I told him, but that's her nature because she is working in an environment where she sees, you know. So it was all very lighthearted. But then I thought that poor boy, bichara, hearing from his mother only ki, I don't know if I'll be here tomorrow, what trauma he must be going through. But then he must be used to it by now. They'll have to do no cleaning. Every day I've cleaned out stuff, everything is in place. Bas aisi gayi to no problem. See what conditioning can do? It's quite amazing. Before my guru passed away, few months before, one day we entered the satsang and he had kept a big table there and all the books I used to see in his room. And it was free for anyone to take. And for me, that was the first sign that the end is near. You want to leave on a clean slate. Don't want to give tension to someone else ki iska kya kare, kitab ka, uska kya kare, what to do with these things. Otherwise, he would have said, damn it, after I'm gone, who cares? Something will happen, something or the other will happen to the books. But these things I saw. Would anyone like to share anything? So what do you think it was? Correct. So that's the main thing actually. Because, you know, we are always striving and trying to improve ourselves and saying, I should not react, I should not be this way. What actually happens is this quality of witnessing without anyone doing the witnessing, which is nothing but the understanding in action, happens on its own. So it's not even a mental process. It's not even like thinking that, okay, I'm going to witness this and I will not react. There's no mentality to it at all. It is what Ramesh would call the understanding in operation. And that is why he would say, allow the teaching to do its job. There's really no me involved in that. But having said that, by and by, I do feel that reactivity undergoes a transformation. Because you see, its foundations have been weakened. So even if one is still reactive, that is the force of the past conditioning is still propelling one on that same path of reactivity. But by and by, that force gets little weaker and weaker and weaker, you know. And therefore, various things could happen. You react and then you say, oh shit, you know, I understand the whole thing, I still reacted. Then you might be moping about the reaction for days on end, but now that is reduced. Because you've accepted, oh God, I reacted based on past conditioning or my nature or whatever. But you know that deep down even that was meant to happen, so you're no longer moping about your reaction like you were earlier saying, oh, why did I do this, why did I do that? That is also becoming shorter and shorter instead of going on for days because you've accepted everything. That is how it's working in operation. So the reactivity may still be there, but it loses its sting. So reactivity, I do feel, undergoes a transformation over time because it takes a lot of unwinding. Because what happens is when an event happens which we react to, our entire attention and consciousness is drawn to it at such lightning speed that we react. It's just like this. But when the charge is lost between both, when you start seeing more and more by this is how people are, this is how things are, this is what they are based on, this, this, that, that, you find that this attention which gets narrow casted and sucked into what one has seen is more objective, more open. It can even witness that event happening because it's no longer so involved in it as it was earlier. And that is why you see that the sages are centered, because things do happen in their lives also. But because they don't lose contact with that centeredness, they don't get involved in the reaction. Reaction may arise, but it just ends at that only. All these trappings of defense mechanisms, of blaming, of this and that, no longer operate to that degree. That is why I say that the person who pushes your buttons the most in your life are actually doing you a favor, because they are giving an opportunity to see that they are precisely the way God made them and not the way you want them to be. And it follows that if I am hurt, deeply hurt, I know what it is to be deeply hurt. So would I wish that same hurt on someone else because I know what it is to be deeply hurt? Would I really wish that because he or she hurt me? Which does not mean I make myself available for being hurt all the time. I take the steps I need to take. I first look within, see where the hurt is coming from. As Dr. Sahib said, that once he came back, he said, for years I did an inventory of all my feelings which arose and emotions which arose within myself. He just did that in his hut. Took an inventory of what people told him, what they did to him, and what he felt about it inside. And then one evaluates oneself with the hurt and takes decisions. Can I express myself? Is there no scope to express myself as far as the other is concerned? If there is no scope, what do I do? Do I have the option to move away from this person or this situation? Do I have the option to see if my hurt is misplaced by any chance? That is the process of going within. But you see, it becomes more and more an objective process. Because one could say one is looking at this now with love. Kaise ho? And you will be surprised at how much we repeat ourselves. If you catch yourself saying the same thing and again to someone, various things are happening. One is you are trying to reinforce what you repeat about a person or a situation. And more importantly, you're repeating it for yourself, not for the other person. And we repeat events from the past, we revive them, resurrect them. You did this at that time, you then said that at that time. I met someone whose favorite phrase was, whenever he was talking about someone, kutte ka dam jab teda ho jata hai, seedha nahi ho jata hai. Whenever, once a dog's tail gets crooked, you can't straighten it. Every person, this dialogue would come up. Kutte ka dam. So I said, hum sab kutte hain and all our dams are crooked. All of our tails have got curled up. Now what are you going to do? They are curled up by our conditioning, by how our parents, our friends, our religion conditioned us. That is life. Ye ladka bigad gaya. One young chap who was this real handsome macho guy and all that, and then started going a bit awry according to him and getting distracted. Kutte ka dam. I said, that is life, yeah. The dog does not deliberately make its tail crooked. Like that, I don't know if it's a joke or I read somewhere, this man says that I realized how much time I would sit and see dogs chasing their own tail round and round till I realized I am the one who's looking at them chasing their tail. It's got nothing to do with the dog. I am looking at it. So what are we looking at all the time? Such a beautiful morning, huh? What's the time like?
Is there a key to continuously remember that the real, what really matters is that I will be done. I tend to forget it. The moment I remember it, everything just shatters.
It's too late, you mean?
No, it's not too late. Huh. But by the mind starts building its home, you know,
yeah.
The stronghold.
I know.
And then from somewhere it comes, and then one contemplates over the thing and then goes back to normal.
See, luckily I didn't go through that process, because I accepted probably from a young age that whatever happens is God's will. So I didn't have that resistance to. It was there, but I guess once I met Ramesh, then whatever was there also.
The question is, understanding is there, but one tends to forget.
Sure.
And then when it comes back, then again one becomes normal.
Correct. That is the process. But see, that one tends to forget is not necessarily so. What is basically, like I said, happening is because the past conditioning is still running. So one is just operating on that loop. It's not that one has forgotten it.
Momentarily.
Yeah, you've not forgotten it, because it's already appealed. Anything which appeals and is imbibed by you can never be forgotten. It appears that way. But the point is that the filters are already in place, you see, of what happened to me since childhood. So that is, has to exhaust itself. It's not that you've forgotten, but you just go into that mode, because that's the past conditioning and that will keep happening. But still, what is deceptive is, I maintain that even that degree of reaction and reactivity will be subtly changing. You may not notice it also, but it keeps losing that pinprick by and by.
It is true that the sharpness has blunted early. The delay is also there in reaction.
Yeah.
One tends to see that, do I really need to react? Let's see some other way. One tends to develop other ways also too, instead of just standard reaction mode.
See, it happened to me a few months ago. We had parked near Zen Cafe. Okay. And I think I mentioned this before. I got into the car and I saw a car reversing into our car, and the car had a lal batti on it. So it was a police car, a politician's car, and he banged into my door. Now my driver could not see all this, because my driver was looking out to get the car out of the parking. I was behind and I saw this guy coming. Now in a split second, various things happened. Anger arose. Anger based on conditioning arose because I saw the lal batti and I knew that these guys think they own the road. And that's why they do these things. They don't care, you know. And again, I had the awareness that this all was going on. So there was this momentary anger fueled by the fact that I saw the lal batti, which if I had not seen, I may still be okay. And I knew that I would love to give a piece of my mind to the driver. But all this happened in awareness. It didn't happen in unawareness. It was not about losing awareness, because I was aware of everything. And I was aware that I had to open the car's door, go out and talk to the guy. And so I did precisely that. I didn't give him a chance to speak. I told him, I said, ye aapka baap ka raasta aap log samajhte ho. You know, all that I told him. And the guy said, sorry sir. And I said, sorry, theek hai, lekin aise kyun karte ho you? And my Hindi is very bad, so I also end up making a fool of myself sometimes. But I did that because I felt like doing it. I felt like telling this guy, because he had the lal batti. So it doesn't mean that the teaching was forgotten. It all played out, you know. And then when I came back into the car, I burst out laughing. And I told myself the job was done. It doesn't mean I'm going to sit, I can see him, he's going to bang, thy will be done. That's not going to happen. Otherwise life will lose its rasa, you see. But everything happens without this targeted doership.
Not for the one and not for the other.
Yeah, and I also felt good that, you know, at least he must think next time. Maybe it has helped this interaction with me. he'll think twice before, you know, being so blindsided and doing what he wants to do. Who knows? Any event can influence both the characters involved in the event in different ways. We don't know. But there was not that involvement in what happened of, you know, going on and berating him and telling him. It was all very smooth. Even in that encounter, it was very smooth. So that is why I say the reaction has a different quality. And at another time, let's say I'm going to the office, sometimes what happens, a car will cut your path. Then the driver likes to, you know, gusav in front and give. Then I'll say, abhi jaane do yaar. Like, it's happened many times, you know. And I'm telling my driver, look, boss, forget all this because I want to reach home in a calm frame of mind. Then even he drops his data.
That I got to learn very fast in Mumbai. In the beginning, I had this tendency to, you know, honk and tell him that you did it wrong. And then in doing that, I would end up doing another mistake.
Exactly.
So I learned that lesson very quickly.